And now back to the 1960 election. So what Kennedy did to try to stand up to the Nixon credentials was to make the claim that America in the 50s had irresponsibly allowed our arsenal to fall behind the Russians. That we had, in fact, that's right, we had what we could call a missile gap. That we've allowed our systems to not stay up steady building like the Russians. No other proof than Sputnik and the space program.
And you're over there the next year.
Mm-hmm. They got guys flying in space. They got dogs flying in space. Got dogs dying in space.
I was just asking the same question about the missile gap. Could we bring in the bomber deficiency of? Are you recording now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just wondered if you turn it back on after the.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Speaking
yeah.
of
yeah,
dogs
fine.
Dying in space, do we have had any kind of?
It's over there.
BBQ type
thing. Look at the look you're getting.
Okay.
So what? He lied. To be honest, he had no idea how much arsenal we had compared to the Russians, but he was attacking the Eisenhower administration. Here's the World War II winner of D-Day, and Nixon being accused of having fallen behind the Russians in the buildup, and that if he was elected and his party took over, we would sure bring America back into secure protection by rebuilding up our arsenal to be able to take the Russians. And when the election was over and Kennedy won and they finally were exposed to the truth of how much weaponry existed, they discovered there was a missile gap. In fact, the Russians were so far behind it was unlikely they'd ever catch up.
The Russians were the ones behind?
Yes.
Remember the U.S. is switching to solid fuel rockets that don't blow up in their face?
So,
and then they created.
So what do we have going on here in the 1960 election? What were both parties doing? Cold War baiting. Yeah, using the Cold War against each other to try to get themselves elected, and that kind of stuff helps accentuate more and more Cold War. Is it feasible that in our recent elections we've had War on Terror baiting?
Yes. Yeah.
The one that really got me was this. When John Kerry, the Democrat, repeated over and over at the nominating convention in his speeches, "Elect me and I will kill the terrorists." He used that verb over and over, "I will kill the terrorists." He's saying, in essence, I can out George Bush, George Bush.
No, this was
a missile gap thing.
The last
2004 election that went on. So you see that same kind of saber rattling politics in the 60 was used in 2004.
He said kill.
Used the verb over and over. Not succumb, not, you know, arrest.
Neutralize.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think if you said I'll succumb to the terrorists.
No, not succumb to. Cause him to succumb to. I mean, rather than overwhelm or defeat or capture or arrest. He kept stressing that verb.
I don't think he could play the surrender card.
And he had to keep stressing his experience in Vietnam over and over.
Wait a second, you can play the surrender card 2006, but not 2004.
Yeah.
All right, I told you some story about how I told my daughter that a Viet Cong soldier just ran away when I had it.
Oh, yeah. The Swift Cody's were the ones all over him for shooting him in the back.
Swift Cody Veterans for Truth people? Like yeah. 527s?
He was in like some kind of close man-to-man combat thing on with a Viet Cong, like sharpshooter or something, I don't know what you call it. And he told America the story that, like, he told his daughter that the guy just ran away and so he didn't have to kill him, but really he killed him. And he told the story to the public. And was, I don't know.
But the way the Swift felt, people retold that it was like he mercilessly shot him in the back running.
Yeah.
Which is not exactly the way to...
That's probably going for a little.
The TV debate. There were actually, I think, am I correct? I may be way out on a limb wrong here, but I think there were like six debates. It wasn't just one. There was more than one for sure.
Yeah, but there was the famous one that cost Nixon the election.
Well, the first one set the tone for the rest and kind of fixed the minds of the voters. And that's the one where Nixon was not feeling well, was under the weather, had not shaved since the morning, had a 5 o'clock shadow, and just looked a lot less comfortable to the voters than did Kennedy, who looked so confident. And as we said before, that those who listened to it on radio couldn't tell the difference between them. They both seemed to win. But the physical appearance made the difference. And that was the first time that television physical appearance made a difference in regards to the outcome of the election. Now, there would not be another TV debate between candidates, if I'm correct, until 1976, when Ford and Carter debated, and then there's been, ever since then, there's been debates. And while we're on it, I'll probably never get back to it. So on the 76th debate between Carter and Ford, Ford was asked a question about Eastern Europe and Poland, and he made the comment that Poland is not under Russian domination. And the question asker kind of thought maybe he slipped up and fouled up and asked him to re-clarify, are you sure there's no Russian domination in Poland?
Who did you say?
Ford, Gerald Ford. And he repeated himself. And that became a major foreign policy gaffe that Carter jumped on immediately and worked. Said, here's our sitting president. It's not even aware who, you know, who's our allies and who's not and who's in control of what. And it was embarrassing to Ford. But years later, when Lech Wałęsa's movement succeeded to get the Russians out of Poland, Ford came back out and said, see, I was right. There is no Russian domination in Poland. Other TV debate moments of interest.
Ex post facto correctness?
Yeah. The 1980 debate between Carter and Reagan. Here's a point I remember that was of interest. Two points that came up. One was Reagan made the comment about the Carter's administration had been a real mess. Inflation ran up to 19 or 20%. Hostages were taken in Lebanon. What's that other place? Tehran.
Iran. Well, Tehran's the
yeah.
city.
And so the hostages were not released, and the interest rates were high, and inflation was bad, gas prices were high. I mean, the domestic and foreign policy stuff was terrible for Carter at the end of the 70s. And the famous Reagan question, I could see this being an AP test question, is on TV he asked the voters, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Of course, obviously not.
Well, they surely weren't better off 4 years after Reagan.
Well, 8 years after, these were remarks that were made in their comments to the questions. Oh. But Carter also said something. This didn't strike as big an impact, but it sure left a memory for me. Carter, knowing that Democrats tended to have the better view of civil rights, and were trying to shore up the base of the black vote, made the comment that Democrats had been concerned about coping with and dealing with and successful with the race problem for a long, long time, and that would be something he would continue to focus on taking care of. The Reagan response, I can remember in America when we didn't have a race problem.
Oh my gosh, that's the best.
Now, that was a vote getter. For whom? For the working class white guy that used to vote for FDR but was sick and tired of affirmative action.
Never mind, I totally misinterpreted what he said. That's the meanest thing ever.
What'd you think he meant?
One more comment about a debate comment. When Reagan ran for re-election, when Reagan ran for re-election in 1984 against Mondale, you know, Reagan was elected the oldest person ever, right? 69?
Yeah.
So by 84, he was running at what age?
Like 73.
84.
Which is how old McCain will be, won't he, when he runs?
How old
yeah,
is
but
he?
He's going to lose.
McCain was that old?
McCain is 72 going on 73.
He doesn't seem
so. As was Dole. He was 72 going on 73 and ran 96. So older candidates now run, but there was some concern that Reagan was going to be too old if reelected. And there was also rumors that flew, and of course I guess it turned out to be accurate years later, that he was starting to lose cognizance. The Alzheimer's did set in right at the end of his presidency, after he left. But there were some who suspected that he had moments of lack of clarity even in the first administration. And there was a point in, where was it? It was in the second debate where he really fumbled and stuttered around trying to get his memory back. But, you know, I do that all the time, so I don't see that as... I hope, you know. But one of the things
what
that
does it mean when you're 16 and 17 on the seat?
But the thing that was that the funniest comment ever made in the debate was when, in regards to this age issue, somebody asked him if he, by the time he leaves office, he'll be whatever it was, will he still be able to handle his responsibilities and duties better than someone years younger than him? And his response was, I promised not to make my opponent's youth and age and a lack of experience an issue, but I guess I'll just have to. And even with that, Mondale laughed. What quick could you do?
I love that.
What can Mondale do other than laugh?
Have you seen Man of the Year?
Kenny Flanagan.
McCain.
Let
me tell you why. Daly's name is on number 60. Richard Daley. We spoke of him earlier, right?
Remember what?
Mayor of Chicago who encouraged his people to get out and vote early and often. If not honestly. And it is said that as the votes were being counted the night of the election, it was so close it was difficult to predict which way things were going to go. It hinged on a few states' changes. The state of Illinois' vote was still in question. It had not come in. And some of that was due to the fact that the Cook County, where Chicago is, votes had not been reported. And probably the best way to explain that is they weren't all cast yet because the ballot stuffing tombstone vote that Daley was in charge of hadn't come through yet. And the Kennedy family called up Daley and wanted to know why Illinois hadn't gone Democratic yet. And the Daley response was, well, I haven't heard what building projects that you're going to promise to do in our state yet. So they wrangled it over the phone about which particular favoritist spending programs will take place in Illinois, and he finally said, well, release the vote, and got the citizens out, got them voted, and he won Illinois. And in response to that, Nixon, who lost the election, is remembered for having said, I can't blame Kennedy, he stole it fair and square.
The candidates really try to rally the corpse vote.
What kind of speech do you give for that? Kennedy was the youngest person to be elected to the presidency, not the youngest to take office. Why not?
Because of some of the
PR did it at 42, but he was elected at 43. His domestic program that he ran on and attempted to deliver through legislation is called the New Frontier. Let's think for a second about previous domestic programs and match the names with the candidates and or presidents. Who had the square deal? Who had the new nationalism?
What? Square deal was
TR's 1912 third party Bulma's candidacy was based on new national. He didn't win. Wilson did, and therefore that's why the New Freedom is remembered, because Wilson's New Freedom package would come in. The best known of them all, of course, is FDR's 1930s one called.
Mm-hmm.
And then following him, Truman's one that didn't go very far was Fair Deal. And now this is New Frontier.
What was the Square Deal?
Square Deal is early TR.
So TR had two of them?
Mm-hmm.
And what are these programs? These are there.
This one here, the New Frontier, was Kennedy's proposal for additional social spending and civil rights measures. And there's kind of an asterisk that went with that. Kennedy's civil rights measures were there to get the black vote and were to be enacted when hell freezes over. Didn't say that, but that was the strategy.
Enacted whatever which comes first. President dies, hell freezes over.
Yeah. Why do I say that?
Can you say
because
they
didn't get enacted
until
after he died. I didn't hear what you said.
Yeah, well, that's why he never said this. I sarcastically said that the civil rights part of the New Frontier had an asterisk next to it, which meant to be enacted when hell freezes over.
Okay.
Does that mean Kennedy was prejudiced?
No, just because he probably couldn't pass it.
He couldn't get reelected if he did.
That's right. You cannot threaten the white Democratic majority voters with civil rights. But you want to keep the black vote on board by making the promise. That's some of the reason I say this is why the King movement went the way it went, and that was you've got to force this administration to take a stand, and by actively getting into the streets and protesting and needing federal protection, it'll force the Kennedy administration to move on defending them, and that would, in the long run, mean they'd have to move on passing legislation. And at the end of the Kennedy years, there was an effort to start moving on legislation, except they killed him. And so that's how LBJ was able to take what Kennedy started but move it along a lot further and add to it. And in many ways, LBJ used the martyred death of Kennedy to get civil rights passed, saying this is what our president would have wanted. Let's not, defeat what he was working on. But Johnson wanted it a lot more than Kennedy.
What was the other part of the New Frontier? Civil rights and what?
Social spending programs. His foreign policy, which may not be on here, but needs to be known, it should be somewhere, was called the Alliance for Progress. In addition to, of course, a hard Cold War position, write down Alliance for Progress. Translation of the Alliance for Progress: we want to help promote economic growth in Central and South America and the Caribbean before what happens.
Yeah,
before communism spread, before Castro and his troublemakers spread communism throughout that region. So if we can build up economic security and growth, people won't listen to communist rhetoric. Who had embodied that idea in the form of a $14 billion grant to Western Europe? George Marshall, the European Recovery Program.
Which, by the way, our JROTC program was participating in the George C. Marshall Leadership Challenge.
At his inaugural address, Kennedy's remembered for the phrase, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country." And this was a call to volunteerism, a call to activity, to patriotism on the part of the youth. Here was this young new president. You know, in some ways, Clinton kind of embodied that. The Clinton presidency looked youthful and down to earth. Well, yeah, he grayed his hair very quickly during that campaign out of a bottle to win election. But he still represented the...
Really?
Yeah, he did. You look at him the year before the campaign, it's my color with gray streaks everywhere. And by the end of the campaign, it's all solid gray.
Can you get gray hair color?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was just
Andy Warhol.
Andy Warhol wore a wig. And then he also dyed his hair, so...
I was about to say, but he's not on AP test, but he is. I'll say that. Where am I going with this? Oh, this is this call for youth. One of the themes of the 60s is the Kennedy presidency revives enthusiasm and hope and a sense of participation and involvement on the idea of the youth. And when his assassination occurs in 63, many say that that idealism in the youth is given the shock of reality that this is a violent world and violence seems to be the answer to the Cold War and civil rights and a lot of things.
Was it that? Or did that just not...
Well, you hear, I was so young, because I was only, when he was killed? When did he kill? 63? I was only 11, so I really wasn't...
Was it that?
...that focused on politics. But the older people tell me how here they had the idea that we were going to move along freedom and democracy and civil rights and equality, and then the person who seems to embody that is killed. It almost gives you that hopelessness that every time you try to do right, the forces of evil come out.
Maybe it was like that invigorated them even more, but then his brother died.
I think that's good. That's a good parallel. That he dies in 63, Robert Kennedy running on the same idealism, more so really in his quest for the presidency, is killed in 68, Martin Luther King is killed in 68 there. It's during the depths of the Vietnam War. I mean, there really is this kind of harsh reality that it's a violent world and it's hard to win idealism in the 60s. Number three, the 23rd Amendment. What does it do? How would it...
About the Peace Corps?
Should have. Peace Corps is another example of what I was just speaking of. He wanted people to volunteer, not just in the military capacity by joining the military, but join organizations like the Peace Corps and VISTA. VISTA did at home what Peace Corps did abroad. VISTA stands for Volunteers in Service to America. What did the Peace Corps do abroad?
Service stuff.
Yeah, they went to poor countries and helped build hospitals and roads and restore medical care and education systems. So that it's not just always military aid to some dictator overseas, it's true social welfare needs that this country is in desperate. In addition to the compassionate heart side of this, what's the purpose of doing it?
Foreign relations.
Yes.
Keep the comments out to prevent a need for funding.
Yes, keep these people
much more compassionate.
The capitalists care and can do better and have more money to do better with than the Russians. Tell you an interesting little movie that deals with this issue right here, and it's fun enough to be worth spending your time watching. It's a Tom Hanks film. It's early in his career. It's called Volunteers. Ever heard of it or seen it?
John Candy?
Yeah, you have seen it.
No, I haven't seen it.
He is a rich, spoiled New England socialite who gets deeply in gambling debts, and in order to avoid being killed by the people he owes the gambling debts to, he jumps on an airplane running off overseas for Peace Corps duty. He has no desire to be part of the Peace Corps, but that's where he is, and he changes from a selfish attitude to being one of more compassionate and caring. But throughout the movie is the obvious references to that the government is doing the Peace Corps more just than out of the goodness of their heart, but as a Cold War measure. He has this famous line.
I have to stop the tape for this. I don't think Volunteers has any famous line.
Oh, it does. It does. He's helping them